Welcome to the program for Friday, October 5th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour. On the Federal News Countdown, two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the three most important for this week for people who work for the federal government. And this week, my experts are Dan Mintz, the former CIO of the Transportation Department and newly minted free agent. You're on the market again.
Yes.
And congratulations to you on that.
It's given me spare time the last couple of weeks to go to an infinite number of Nationals baseball games, which has been a treat.
And the sad news is that you won't have an infinite amount of time to go to Capitals games, which is another of your passions, because they're not going to be playing for the foreseeable future.
Yes, that's a very unfortunate thing.
Well, I'm glad to have you here, free agency or not, and thank you very much for coming in. And my other expert on the countdown today is John Salamone, the former director of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council and now with FMP Consulting. And it is great to see you, as always, too, my friend.
Thank you very much, Francis. It's great to be back.
And you have not been going to an infinite number of baseball games, but you have been doing some other cool things.
I have been, and I actually have gone to a handful of baseball games and have enjoyed them, and congratulations to the Nationals making the playoffs. And do they have the best record in baseball?
They do indeed.
Yes.
And it is great to see you as always. I love having both of you on the program, and we are going to start, as we always do, with
number three.
The third most important federal news story of the week, as selected by John Salamone, is from the Washington Post. The headline is Pioneering Collector of African Music Retires from Voice of America. And I have to admit, John, I love you, and I respect your choices of stories, but I did scratch my head a little bit on why you thought this one was third most important story of the week.
One of the reasons why I chose this is, as a broadcaster, I was very interested in your opinion on the story. But as I've mentioned on previous federal news countdowns, I always like to read the paper, combing for compelling personal stories. And Saturday's Washington Post article about Leo Sarkisian, who at 91 years old, retired from the Voice of America after 40-plus years of service and running America's longest English language program, there were a lot of fascinating aspects about the story. First of all, he was hired by Edward Murrow, traveled through Africa to record rare music and share rare music that may have never been played on the airwaves without him, served as a map drawer in World War II. Very interesting history, very interesting career. But two things that I were drawn to. I think, first of all, Mr. Sarkisian and his wife had an uncanny ability to connect with people and to get them to feel comfortable as they traveled from country to country, village to village, making these thousands of rare recordings. But second, I chose the story, was I admire his service to our country. And as a former executive director of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council and someone that's been involved with government for 20-plus years and spending time working for Senator Voinovich, those stories are very compelling. And, we live in a time when federal employees are in the hot seat of controversy, a lot of talk about pay gaps, pay freezes, sequestration, staffing cuts. It's nice to see the Washington Post highlight a federal employee who clearly loved his job and had much to offer through his work.
Well, as a broadcaster, I congratulate him on this terrific career. And I just did a little bit of math. And if I stayed at this job for 47 years, I would be 89 when I retired. And I love Federal News Radio, but I have a hard time believing that they'll let me stick around for that long. So congratulations to him on his service, of course, but also on his stamina for being able to do the same thing. He's very fortunate to be able to do something that he loved so passionately.
Most definitely.
For this period of time.
And that came through in the article.
It is a good story, and it's linked up on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Dan Mintz, your third most important federal news story of the week's from the Federal Times. The headline is GSA can't verify cloud email savings, the inspector general says. This is a kind of a subtext that I've been starting to hear a little bit, not just at GSA and not just about email, but about cloud in general. And it's been interesting because the response that I've seen from some vendors is, well, it's not just about saving money when it comes to talking about the transition to the cloud. Are you hearing the same things that I'm starting to hear?
Yeah, so the article is sort of at two levels. At the top level, on the surface, it's a standard kind of story. IG comes in, finds a series of things that were wrong. In this case, among other things, that they couldn't find the cost savings being proved. Agencies agrees with the findings and, in fact, has said they're going to come back and at least give some data to support the original premise. But underlying, you've exactly got the point, in my opinion. We talked about cloud, I think, on this show at least a year ago. And the comment I made at the time was that what will drive this, and you're going to see this in some of the other articles, is the issue of the does it affect the mission? The problem when you just focus on cost savings in the federal government is that the cost accounting is not necessarily its strongest suit. It's very difficult for the government to track the actual detailed costs. So if you don't have the beginning costs very accurately done, you're not going to be able to track the later costs. But more importantly, if you want support on the Hill for a particular program, while it's useful to say you're reducing costs, they're going to get excited when the delivery of the service to the citizen in some fashion is being enhanced. That gets them excited. And to some extent, if you're going to move things to the cloud, it has to be put in the context of why is it enhance the mission of the agency.
The story says GSA was the first agency to move its entire staff to a single cloud email system in June 2011. It's been touted as a leader in cloud adoption within the federal sector. But I note in the story, in the GSA, in the IG report, and even in the headline, the point is more that the agency can't verify the savings, not that they haven't actually achieved the savings. And there's a difference, right?
Yes, and you have this is, again, an argument, if I can use terms, because I probably use them again a couple of times, efficiency versus effectiveness. Efficiency says I'm doing something and I'm doing it well. So I'm trying to get from A to B, and I did it with the lowest number of steps. But the second question, effectiveness, is when I got to B, did I achieve the goals I wanted to achieve? The government, and probably private industry too, is much better at measuring efficiency. That is, that I thought I'd take four steps, I took four steps. They're not very good at measuring effectiveness. That is, now that I've done it, did I actually do it? And I think, again, which regardless of what happens in terms of the next administration, this, I think, is going to be a growing issue in a very broad sense across the administration as we get into lean budget times, that our programs not just efficient, but also, are they actually effectively achieving their goals?
How do you fix the measurement of the effectiveness of the programs, or is that something that agencies should look outside for somebody to come and help them do?
Well, I think they need some help. At the end of the day, you need to agree upon the standards you're using so that people will agree to that. So you don't argue about is it working or not working, but you first have to come to an agreement upon how do you measure if it's working. That's very hard. The other thing is you need to have senior leadership that is willing to, in a public fashion, be able to expose failure when it happens. The reason why people don't like to do these effectiveness measurements is they're afraid to admit that there's something that has to be fixed.
Dan Mintz's third most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is GSA can't verify cloud email savings, IG says. And you can read that story linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The second most important story of the week from Dan Mintz and from John Salamone when the Federal News Countdown continues in just a moment. This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources at myvillagegreen.com. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane.
The challenges faced by agencies demand a new way of managing existing IT assets while accelerating the adoption of technology such as cloud and mobility to drive increased efficiencies. How can the government provide services and support the mission in this new era? Tune in to the IT Innovation in the New Era of Government panel, sponsored by Unisys, to hear CIOs from HUD, EPA, and the Census Bureau to share how they're navigating the change in their organizations. Tune in on Tuesday, October 9th at noon on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Michael Tice, chief counterintelligence expert at CERT Insider Threat Center, commented during the panel discussion titled "The Accidental Insider Threat: Is Your Organization Ready?" Brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
What is a malicious insider? We define that as an employee or a contractor or someone who has authorized access to an organization's systems and networks and uses that access to create harm or damage or something that's inappropriate against organizational policies. So the unintentional would be the lack of the intent.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen. In today's ever-changing environment, effective cybersecurity takes more than simply implementing IT solutions. Whether the threat is deliberate or accidental, from an inside or outside source, Booz Allen Hamilton's holistic approach enables organizations to adopt a remediation strategy that most effectively addresses their security requirements and risk profile. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Let's play a quick game. I say salt. You might say pepper. What about Kaiser Permanente? I'll wait. Still waiting. Did anybody say advanced technology? It's true. We have the world's largest private electronic medical record system. It's how our doctors know instantly if you're overdue for tests or life-saving screenings, which means our members get fast, convenient, high-quality care. What about top doctors? That's true, too. Many of our doctors come from schools such as Harvard, Stanford, and Johns Hopkins, just to name a few. And how about highest ranked? As in J.D. Power and Associates ranked Kaiser Permanente highest in member satisfaction among commercial health plans in the Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. region 4 years in a row. Of course, if you did say any of those things, then, well, you're probably already a member. Not a member yet? Learn more at kp.org/MidAtlantic. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. For J.D. Power and Associates award information, go to jdpower.com.
Can Congress back away from the fiscal cliff? I'm Emily Kopp. On Monday's Federal Drive, the University of Maryland's Don Kettle says his students did it. And the Sunlight Foundation's Dan Schulman explains how agencies can get on the same page with big data. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown this week. The most important news stories of the week is selected by Dan Mintz and by John Salamone. And this week we are up to
number two.
The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Dan Mintz. It's Jason Miller's story on federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Big Data Gauntlet Thrown Down for Agencies. And we just talked about cloud a minute ago, which was the buzzword of 2009, 2010, and maybe 2011. Big data is trying to become, I think, the buzzword of 2013. It's going to be the thing that we hear just till we're sick of it over the next 18 to 24 months. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I want to point out that I always at least pick one article by Jason Miller to curry favor.
Just to throw him a bone.
Yes.
All right. Well, good
so
for you.
I think it might. There may be an OMB initiative, the fastest from buzzword to implementation. They're trying to speed up the process because big data, where cloud computing at least took 6 months to a year while people were wrestling through what it is.
Well, they tried to figure it out.
Big data, no one even cares what it is. They want to do it.
Uh-huh.
So I want to contrast that a little bit from the cloud computing part because, in fact, big data actually is tied inherently in many ways to the mission of the government. That is, government, one of the reasonable functions that I think most people agree with on all parts of the political spectrum is that government does have a role enshrined in some cases in the Constitution in terms of the collection of data. And one of the roles certainly of government should be to transparently provide data to the people who are interested in it. So the mission of actually dealing with data and collecting it in an intelligent way, sharing it in an intelligent way, both internally and externally, is very closely tied to mission. And I think this gives a lot of power to this. It's one of the reasons why I think this is taking off so quickly.
One of the things that you mentioned is the ability of the end user to do something with this information. I'm encouraged by the fact that that seems to be the focus of the agencies that are trying to figure out what to do with big data. It's not, as cloud appeared to be at the beginning, we're going to do it for the sake of doing it. They want to see, we have all this information, how can we comb through it? Now, John, in your experience as a human resources expert, I imagine there were times where you said, we have all this information, or we potentially have access to this information. If we could only collect it and sort it, we would be able to fill in the blank. What are some applications that you potentially see agencies being able to do in the area of human resources that they haven't been able to do just because of the inability to automate the data or whatever?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I was writing notes down as Dan was talking, and you either can read my mind or my talking points, because really the challenge is there is all that data out there, and how do you make sense of it? If you read the president's 2013 budget submission to Congress in the management section in the back, they talk about data and analytics. And I think there's a huge push through the GIPR Modernization Act to get agencies to really focus on it. And really, agencies have a lot of different data sources, and it's trying to build a way to get that source information into one warehouse. And I know NASA has done a tremendous job. They've got so many different data sources out there that they can pull data in, and they've got real-time information that goes to their hiring managers. And when agencies can get to that point, they're going to be able to make the stronger connections to, you know, do we have the right do we have the right skill set? Do we have the right workforce? Are we aligned properly? And making sure that they're tying that information, as Dan said, back to the mission of the agency.
Am I correct in assuming that one of the most, the greatest benefits for HR people will be the ability to analyze that information and apply predictive analysis to it and figure out not just this year, 2 years from now, but a 5 and 10 year window that maybe you haven't had in the past?
Most definitely. And we'll talk a little bit about, you know, sequestration and the budget cuts. And I think agencies have to conduct scenario planning. And in order to conduct scenario planning, you have to have the data, and you have to know what to do with it, and you have to know how to cut it and manipulate it in ways that are going to tell different stories. So you can make your budget justifications through your CFO, up to the COO, and back to the administration, and then eventually to the Hill.
Dan, do you see the agencies asking the right questions of the vendor community about big data, and or do you see the vendor community positioned to be able to provide the government with the services they need to be able to comb this data and mine it for usable information?
Yeah, I think the government agencies conceptually understand what they want to do, but they're going to have to work with vendors both at a software level, that is how to access, but also at a storage level, how to even store this stuff to be able to work with it. We're dealing with areas where people haven't done it before. One other thing, I've mentioned this before, the other thing about the federal government that this will demonstrate is, in private industry, because of the nature of the beast, you tend to drive these things completely top down. You know, it's driven from strategic plan and implemented downward. Because the budget process and the organizational process in the federal government is so fragmented, you may drive the initiatives from the top, but they're often implemented at the bottom, which is backwards. Doesn't seem right, but that's the only way to work it. One of the things that's not, is only a little bit emphasized here, but I think will have to be, is the need for data standards underneath it. The technical term, typically XML, which is a data standard that would be used. That, if I ruled the world, that I could come up with an OMB initiative that I think should have a little bit more emphasis. It's defining, in a broad sense across the federal government, data standards that allow this data to be shared, so that underneath there's a very solid foundation.
The idea of standards, though, we always get into a fight about who should do it and whose standards should it be. Is this something that is going to get added to NIST's plate, or maybe already is?
A little bit. I would see there's a it mentions in the article there is a big data committee that NIST is, and NSF, I guess, is involved with. I mean, ultimately, this is an OMB responsibility. I would see them turning to NIST to provide the intellectual leadership.
I'll ask both of you. Do you think that we yet understand all the possibilities of what we can do with big data? Dan, you said agencies have an idea of what they want to do, but that doesn't necessarily mean they understand all the things that they potentially could do with the amount of data that the government generates and has access to. Or maybe that's such an existential question it can't even really be answered.
So using a previous phrase, historical business analytics dealt with known unknowns. That is, you knew you wanted to find out about the error rate with Social Security payments, let's say. So you knew that, but you didn't know the data, so you studied the data. This is going to allow people to discover unknown unknowns. They'll look at the data, and it's going to tell them about questions they haven't even thought to ask. That's a real change in thinking. It's going to take time to get to that point.
Is that change going to – is the time that that change takes because people are going to have to change their mindsets or because people are going to have to change their business practices or both?
I think the challenge is going to be they're going to have to do things they've never done before.
That's always a challenge, right, John?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Dan Mintz's second most important federal news story of the week is Jason Miller's story on federalnewsradio.com, headlined Big Data Gauntlet Thrown Down for Agencies. It is about the Big Data Challenge that came out on Wednesday, the National Science Foundation, NASA, and the Energy Department launching that. You can read about it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The second most important federal news story of the week, as chosen by John Salamone, is next on the Federal News Count. Down. This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Travel reimbursement rates for federal employees are staying flat in 2013. The standard per diem rate will remain at $123 for lodging, meals, and incidental expenses, according to the General Services Administration. Dan Tangerlini, the acting administrator of GSA, said keeping the rates at 2012 levels will help agencies control costs. He said it also reflects the goal of the administration to cut agency travel by 30%.
WEPA. A nonprofit association has just announced another 25% premium refund. Since 1996, WEPA policyholders have received 16 annual premium refunds totaling over $65 million. WEPA also offers life insurance at rates far less than the Fegley program. Isn't it time you considered WEPA for your family's life insurance needs? For better insurance, better prices, and better value, visit WAEPA.org. That's WAEPA.org.
Looking for ways to help your agency help the environment? GSA has two free online resources that promote sustainability. With GSA's newly updated carbon footprint tool, you can compile your agency's annual greenhouse gas inventory and track progress toward meeting your reduction goals. And with GSA's sustainable facilities tool and green products compilation module, you can help your agency make sustainable purchasing decisions. To learn more, join the conversation today at interact.gsa.gov/sustainability.
Last year, the Obama administration created the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace to provide privacy and security for sensitive online transactions. That strategy calls for an identity ecosystem in which the government and the private sector can be authoritatively authenticated. Join AFSIA Bethesda October 10th at the Bethesda North Marriott as agency leaders share insights on the implementation and challenges to regulate identity and access management. Register today at afsiabethesda.org/octbreakfast.
Hey Ravens fans, join your friends and fellow fans and paint the town purple this season.
Fires over the middle, it's intercepted! Ray Lewis with a pick!
Celebrate Purple Fridays every week by wearing your best purple jersey, shirt, or accessory to school, work, or play on Fridays. For happy hour, head to your favorite Bill Bateman's Bistro for appearances from the cheerleaders. Find the schedule on BaltimoreRavens.com. Show your team spirit and get your purple on.
Leading by Doing. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Kids do what their parents model, and one study shows this in parents and kids' physical activity. At National Jewish Health in Denver, Kristen Holm looked at data on 83 families with overweight or obese kids ages 7 to 14. Children and parents got a goal of increasing their physical activity by 2,000 steps a day. Holm says that on days when a parent reached or exceeded the goal, the kids did, too, but not otherwise. She also says the good days were more often on weekends.
Given that the effect was strongest on weekends, I think that what was happening is that parents were finding activities to do with their children that they could engage in on weekends.
The study in the Journal of Physical Activity and Health was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
AFSIA Bethesda's fifth Health IT Day comes October 18th to the Bethesda North Marriott. Hear from more than 25 federal speakers on electronic health records, shared services, big data, mobility, and more. Keynotes from Roger Baker of VA, Tony Trenkel of HHS, and Frank Bateman of HHS. Register today at fciabethesda.org/healthitday. FCA Bethesda thanks its sponsors Adobe, CNSI, Deltek, EMC, IBM, KGS, KPMG, National Government Services, and NCI.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're on the Federal News Countdown with Dan Mintz and John Salamone. And John, your second most important federal news story of the week is from the New York Times. The headline is Leaders at Work on Plan to Avert Mandatory Cuts. I'm happy they didn't use the word sequestration in the headline, but they use it just a couple sentences in, and of course the first sentence of the story they use the term fiscal cliff.
Yes,
which is much more ominous than even sequestration. What more can we say, I guess, about this other than at least it looks like somebody in Congress is trying?
Yeah, and that's the point that I wanted to make today was that, you know, you've got a group of bipartisan senators led by Senator Bennett from Colorado and Lamar Alexander from Tennessee, and they're, you know, trying to use the post-election session to, you know, come up with a comprehensive reduction plan. And the best thing is that they're talking. Now, I think that the sides are probably miles apart, but for me, having spent time again on the Hill and working for, you know, a moderate Republican is, you know, can Senators Bennett and Alexander gain enough momentum from the middle and try and push out on either side to bring the sides closer together? I mean, you've got, you know, so if we can get the deal done in the Senate, then can they get something done in the House? I mean, that's another ball of wax that needs to be uncovered too. I mean, the House Republicans have said they won't agree to anything that resembles a tax increase. And the White House has said that they're against extending tax cuts for the highest wage earners. So can they come together and resolve these issues? I think a lot of it's going to depend on the election.
The part of this whole issue that bothers me the most, and I will blame this on both parties, every single member of the House and Senate, is not one person is being honest with the people in the executive branch or with the American people. And this deficit reduction plan that this story refers to, likely to be around $4 trillion over 10 years, that still doesn't impact the debt at all, because that still will leave us in a deficit spending situation 10 years from now. So this isn't getting fixed maybe in our lifetimes, gentlemen. I mean, that's the magnitude of this. I don't think people that are about to go vote for whoever you're going to vote for really understand that. Am I out of line, Dan, do you think?
Well, I have two comments. One is it will get fixed in our lifetime. It just may not be very pleasant
That's a good point. Okay,
because
fair
the marketplace, the ability to keep running large deficits is dependent on somebody somewhere financing the debt. And at some point in time, the interest costs are going to be so dramatically high for many different reasons that all of these other expenses are going to get crowded out of the budget. It's not going to happen in the political lifetime of the current incumbents or either candidate running for president this time, but it's going to happen certainly in the lifetime of our children, for those of us who have children.
So the situation is we're borrowing about 40% of the money that the federal government spends. And so I'm not even smart enough to do the algebra equation to do the reverse engineering of it. You probably could, Dan. And you're an HR guy, so math might not be. I'm not going to ask you.
I was told there would be no math.
No disrespect to all the HR folks out there that are listening that are math wizards, but if we cut spending by 20%, by 25%, we're still not close.
No, I think the other thing, this is a little tangential to it, but the other thing that's I find difficult about some of the legislation that's going on, if you look at the polling data of the average voters trust or distrust of public institutions. Where when I was much younger, now a million years ago, it was 50, 60, 70% positive. Now it's 20, 30% positive. And if you look at this kind of legislation, it's not only that they're not facing the issues, they're solving it indirectly. Now, Congress is setting up all these different rules where they don't have to vote on it. They vote, they say, well, we'll cut the budget, but we're not actually going to vote on cutting the budget. And there's a lot of revenue raising and decisions that are being made where it's completely taken out of the hands of the elected officials. And I think the average American voter sees that and holds them not being responsible. And I think in the long term, that's a very, very dangerous direction we're going in. People have to take responsibility.
Yeah, my theory about those approval ratings is that people just decided that they can't trust anybody that's in leadership roles. And this goes to the banks. You know, we thought that bankers that led the big Wall Street banks were experts at what they did. They apparently weren't. Same thing with leadership in government. And you can just keep going down the line. And I imagine that's where a lot of that discomfort comes from.
Yeah. Again, it's easy to say. I'm sure I'd find it harder to do. But I think if the elected officials do not take ownership of some of these issues, I don't think American people are going to believe them much.
Yeah, and I'm skeptical that we're going to have a resolution by this bipartisan group. I mean, it would be wonderful, but I think that we're going to look for opportunities. Congress will look for the opportunities, and when push comes to shove, they'll kick the can down the road another 6 months, another 12 months, and they're not going to solve the problem. They're not going to make the hard choices that need to be made, and that's very troubling.
That's exactly the sense that I got from Congressman Van Hollen when he was on the program a week or so ago. That's what he said. Well, a potential solution for this might be that we get some kind of I'm paraphrasing. He didn't use the term extender, but that's essentially what it was, where we come to some kind of an agreement deal that puts it off for another 6 months till we can negotiate some more. And then I said, well, doesn't that put us in the situation where we're back in the same deal in April or June or whenever that extended period runs out? Well, that seems to be kind of the price that we pay in order to prevent it from happening on January 2nd.
Right.
Yeah, well, the American people have contradictory opinions of all that. I mean, the reason this is all happening is the American people themselves are conflicted. They don't want to spend all the money, but they don't want to give up any of the benefits. And that's until that gets resolved, either through leadership on the political front or somehow it gets resolved, that this is just going to continue.
That's the part of it that I think is the most difficult to understand. Is the first step would be simply, let's just take an inventory of everything that the federal government does. Let's require each agency to inform Congress as to just the whole list of everything they do. And the GAO's started to work on that, and they've even had to break it into three one-year periods. I mean, they're in the process now of preparing the third and final one. We've seen two already, and there's a tremendously long list of duplicative programs and so on. And Congress hasn't shown any appetite to address those issues either. And that they're pretty much the only ones that can do it, it seems to me.
That is incredibly difficult. And I think in principle, you will have members of Congress that agree, yes, eliminating overlap and duplication is an important aspect of deficit reductions and creating efficiencies in government. But when push comes to shove, you may have a chairman of a committee that oversees a particular program that may mean jobs for his constituency or whatever, and it's the not in my backyard syndrome. Don't cut that program because it's important for my committee. It's important for my constituency. It's important for my district or my state. And, you know, I think that we really have to have those difficult conversations, and those decisions need to be made. And when a member and a chairman of a committee stands up and says, I'm going to cut this program, and it maybe because it's inefficient or it's duplicative, then we may start to see change. But I have yet to see anyone be, you know, kind of willing to take that risk or that challenge head on at this point.
I'm encouraged just by the makeup of this group because, as you say, they're I think Politico refers to them as the Gang of Eight now.
Yes.
It was the Gang of Six, and their names escape me right now. And you mentioned Senators Bennett and Alexander, who are joining this group. None of them are in leadership. Senator Alexander is the closest thing to leadership, but he's stepping down or has stepped down from his leadership post on the Republican side in the Senate. So he's not even involved in the leadership mix anymore. Maybe that is a good thing because it won't involve the members who are up there railing against the other side all the time. John Salamone's second most important federal news story of the week is from the New York Times. The headline is Leaders at Work on Plan to Avert Mandatory Cuts. You can read it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important stories of the week as selected by John Salamone and Dan Mintz when the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This little girl needs some food. She needs some place to sleep. She needs some help. She needs some, so others might eat. An organization that has been serving the homeless and poor in Washington, D.C. for over 40 years.
For more information about So Others Might Eat, go to www.some.org.
This little girl needs some hope.
Today's National Cybersecurity Month coverage is sponsored by Level 3 Communications.
The Defense Department says a consolidated cloud that includes the intelligence community is on its way. Defense Information Systems Agency Director Ronnie Hawkins says the Defense Department will train a new workforce of cybersecurity experts to support the new infrastructure.
When it comes to protecting your mission-critical business data, turn to Level 3. Mitigate risk, protect your assets, and support the continuity of your business. Learn more at level3.com/secure.
Are small businesses being cheated out of contracting opportunities with federal agencies? For the last 6 years, the government has failed to meet its small business contracting goal. In our special report, The Small Business Dilemma, Federal News Radio examines why this is happening. Some fingers point to the Pentagon, plus advice from agencies that are making a difference in the small business arena. The Small Business Dilemma, beginning Tuesday on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Want the latest Department of Defense news? Listen every Wednesday for DoD Wednesday on Federal News Radio. Wednesday afternoons at 2, Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. Then stick around Wednesday afternoons at 3 when in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a deep dive into the issues and challenges of the defense community. All this plus our daily DoD updates at 40 past the hour, only on Federal News Radio 1500.
You're listening to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown featuring the three most important federal news stories of the week is on the air, and John Salamone and Dan Mintz are selecting the stories. We're up to
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Dan Mintz, is from Federal Computer Week. The headline is Industry Resists Government's Push for Low Prices. And in the budget times that we're in right now, that's not a very encouraging headline, I would say.
Well, to some extent, this is the inevitable step in the acquisition process. And I want to say, we have all these other talk. We talked about cloud computing and big data and all these other things. At the end of the day, the government still has to go through a relatively complex acquisition process to buy any of these things, and it makes it very difficult. And what happens is more and more, and all the large procurements, if you talk to large vendors today, they will tell you they build in as part of their formal schedule a month or two at least for protest. It's built into the standard schedule. Now, the FAR is very complicated. No human being can memorize all that 1,000 pages or whatever it is. and do that. So what happens is when there's a push now to save money, and the term they use, LPTA, is lowest price technically acceptable. Nominally, it's a two-step process. You first determine if something is technically acceptable, and then of those that are technically acceptable, you take the lowest cost. Well, if you determine what's technically acceptable for real and then do lowest cost, then you, the acquisition person, own the responsibility. If you just take the lowest cost, it's a math question. No one can argue with a math question. So the inevitable result of every time you try and do it right, you get your hand slapped or you get into trouble or you get protested, is just do lowest cost and the heck with it. And the problem with that is you may get the lowest cost for one day, but the government over a multi-year contract will not necessarily end up with the lowest overall cost by doing this. And that's the point. It may be, as we say, spitting in the wind, but that is the point that was trying to be made in this article.
One of the things, though, that I'm sure that you've seen in your career, John, is risk aversion is very high on the list of what people want to do, especially in contract shops. Is if there's any way we can avoid controversy and avoid being in the spotlight, we're going to do it. And if that means we have to do LPTA, then we'll do LPTA.
Yeah, but I don't know if I'd be really interested in Dan's position on this. Does the government ultimately get the best value then? And are they getting the best technically? It may be low cost, technically acceptable, but is it the best product? And if they're going solely on low cost and what's technically acceptable, is that a low bar or is that a high bar?
Simple answer is no.
Okay.
That's the answer. I mean, but the problem is, Everything you do that then is beyond this is difficult to do.
The vendors have been railing against LPTA for as long as I've been paying attention to this kind of stuff, years, decades maybe. They are just really struggling still this far into the game at explaining to agencies, though, what John is talking about, which is how do you demonstrate return on investment over the life cycle of a particular contract rather than just pure dollars up front?
So, I'm not an acquisition expert, though I've had to deal with acquisition both inside and outside of government. In private industry, you have lots of big acquisitions. There are certainly rules of acquisition. There is an attempt to be fair, but you don't have 1,000-page manuals that cover every single issue, and life goes on. The question that ultimately to solve this is it possible to get to change the process so that even if the acquisition process isn't perfect, but it didn't unfairly change the result, can you get by? And I'm not sure that'll be allowed in there. I mean, this has been something that, we've wrestled with performance measurements and that didn't seem to work. And then, we've tried 1,000 different things in terms of trying to make it better. But this process, I agree. I believe that this is sort of the inevitable endpoint at this point, particularly because of the huge budget pressures. No one fundamentally is going to get into public trouble if they pick the lowest price solution.
And tying back to the big data question, I mean, are agencies even capturing data on the benefits that they're getting from their contracts? And one way to shift the balance is maybe move to performance-based contracts and really start tracking the value, the dollar value, but the value of the contractors that are making and helping the agencies achieve their mission and tying everything back to the mission. Is the mission getting done? Do the contractors support the mission in a way that's cost effective?
Dan Mintz's most important federal news story of the week is from Federal Computer Week. The headline is Industry Resists Government's Push for Low Prices. It's linked now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. John Salamone's story is all we have left on the Federal News Countdown. We'll talk about it next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'll tell you what. attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General hosted payload program. That's spacedelivered.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guests, John Dedon, my partner at Odin Feldman & Pittleman, and Wendy Payne, who is the owner and operator of a company called Life Stage Transitions. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the full-service law firm of Odin Feldman & Pittleman, located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
How is the military health system, MHS, using innovative technologies? What about advancing an interoperable health IT system across DOD and VA? Join host Michael Keegan as he discusses these issues and more with Mark Googe, MHS's Chief Technology Officer. It's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Garden of Life and Boron.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
For 125 years, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth of our nation's capital and its surrounding communities. Your support will help over 21,000 youth who need you most walk through the doors of a Boys and Girls Club and walk out with a plan for their future. Every dollar donated in fiscal year 2012 will be matched up to $250,000 by Stanley Martin Homes. You can help. Go online to www.bgcgw.org and change someone's life. This message is brought to you by GEICO.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by two experts in the world of the federal government. This week it's Dan Mintz and John Salamone. And John, your number one story of the week's from the Wall Street Journal. The headline is Candidates Spar Over Taxes. Now, the arguments about the debate, the presidential debate on Wednesday night, are interesting to people who live in the political world. But in the federal government world, in the operations world, why did you think this was the most important thing that happened this week?
Well, I think, first of all, as you mentioned, the political world, it's really one of the reasons why I chose this as my number one story. I mean, having been involved with government and politics, it's a really exciting time of year. You know, I think the Wall Street Journal article was very, was a comprehensive summary, very fair and balanced. And, you know, the one thing that jumped out at me from, the debate standpoint, when Governor Romney talked about reducing the size of government through attrition, there were a lot of, back and forth and a lot of, elements of the debate that resonated with me. But that's the one that screamed human capital management. And that's the issue that stuck out the most with me. And I'm sure your listeners are interested in the details of his plan. I'm certainly interested in learning more about the details of his plan, but I think the president's talked about consolidation of agencies and programs to eliminate overlap and duplication. So that one exchange and that one set of exchanges really was the one that resonated with me the most.
The issue with attrition is that assumes that we let the people who are leaving government decide where the government should get smaller and not let somebody in the executive branch decide where the government should get smaller. That's the issue that I see there from an operational perspective, from a federal manager's perspective. Am I off base there?
No, I don't think you're off base. I think that there are a lot of tools, there are a lot of resources that agencies can use draw down their workforce through attrition, and you know, there are new flexibilities like phasing retirement through part-time authority, and that if you have executives that are leaving that are at much higher salaries, can you bring in individuals through like the Pathways program at lower grades, lower salaries to reduce the cost and maybe even reduce the size of the federal government? So I mean, I think there are a lot of tools that are out there. Agencies have to start focusing on that. They have to be mindful and they have to be able to measure and look at the data. Again, it's coming back to the data. I mean, that's a theme that we've been talking about throughout the segment. Do they have a good handle on what their workforce is like, what the size of their workforce is like, and what workforce they're going to need in order to get the job done in the future?
You know, we're having this conversation and the backdrop to it that we didn't know about when we watched the debate on Wednesday night was OPM announcing that they got almost 12,000 applications for retirement in September instead of the 7,000 they thought they were going to get. That's almost, well, not almost double, but it's 5,000 more than they were expecting. You and I have talked before, Dan, about your transition out of transportation and the process or lack thereof in knowledge management and just understanding what you knew and what you had learned and instituted while you were there and be able to transfer that to somebody else coming in to follow you in your job. As the retirement numbers get bigger and as a potential President Romney would probably try to encourage more people to leave, that becomes an even bigger problem, I would imagine.
Yeah, knowledge management is talked about a lot more than it's actually implemented well. You have both the problem of how do you capture it, and then you have the perhaps even bigger problem, how do you get people to use it afterward, because people tend to be so focused on their day-to-day job that they that the automated tools aren't very necessarily very useful or very easy to use. I think the one of the previous article that had been brought up also indicates that at the end the budget pressures are going to force whoever wins to deal with expenditures on staff on the size of the government. There are going to be limits that are going to be imposed, whether regardless of what position one has. So this issue, I think, is going to affect everybody.
We could do a whole hour probably just on this conversation, and it would be actually great to have both of you do that. We're out of time for today, and I want to thank John Salamone for being on the program. Dan Mintz, thank you for being here as well. A terrific Federal News Countdown, as always. You can hear the show archived at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and you can find all the stories that we talked about linked up there as well. Hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose is next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.